You're listening to the ESP, the European Skeptics Podcast, an independent weekly show set out to bring you news, interesting topics and interviews with people mostly from Europe, building bridges and breaking down language barriers to show the world how active and awesome the skeptical movement is in the region. This is episode 426. I'm your host, András Pinter, and joining me for the show is my co-host, Pontus Böckmann. See ya!
Hey San, András. Are you back from your world tours?
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
I am back from, not a world tour, but I traveled almost 5,000 kilometers in 11 days. So, that's a pretty long freaking tour. I went to Sicily and back on a tour bus. So,
Okay.
It was a lot of fun, but I always love being in Italy, so I usually don't mind. It's just super tiring. Have you been traveling lately or no?
Well, I have actually. I've been in Gothenburg. A friend of mine turned 60. Well, actually, two months ago, but we had a celebration for him in Gothenburg. It was great. And I will go back to Gothenburg next week too. Of course, it's the annual meeting for meeting for VOF, the Swedish Skeptics. I will mention that a little bit later in connection with one of the news items. So stay tuned.
Oh, okay. But speaking of traveling, first of all, I'll be traveling next week. This weekend, actually, I'll be traveling through Germany and Belgium to the United Kingdom, all the way up to Scotland and back. Again, on a tour bus.
Say hello to
Nessie.
Crazy
as it sounds. Yes, I'll say hello to Nessie. But I always love going back to the UK for a visit, at least. I'm not sure I would like to live there anymore. no offense to anyone who does. But it's just so messy these days.
Things have changed.
However, I will definitely go to the UK for a visit in October.
Could it be I'm planning?
Yes, it probably is, because I made the first important step towards making sure that I'll be there at QED 2024, and that is booking my ticket. And I probably was among the first ones, because the moment it opened, went online, I jumped right in and I did my booking. So
I was right up there with you. I think it was 20 seconds past 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock Swedish or Central European time. It was 3 o'clock UK time that they released the ticket.
Same here.
20 seconds afterwards, I was there. So, yes, we will be there.
Yeah, of course. And we will be there. We will have a lot of fun. And for those of our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, QED is probably the greatest gathering of skeptics and science enthusiasts in Europe. It's been going on for a long, long time, like 15 years or so. There was one in 2011, that's for sure. And since then, there were a lot of them. And we've been there for almost all of them, which is amazing. And that is happening between the 19th and the 20th of October 2024. So be there or be square. It's really amazing. It's a fantastic time, a great weekend. And there will be a Skepticamp as well, which is a series of lightning talks. And it's completely free. And it's before the actual weekend. It's over the day of Friday before the actual QED starts. So it's a lot of fun.
Yes. Are you going to give a speech? Well, you have to be accepted.
I'll be applying. Yeah,
you will
I'll
be applying.
Definitely apply.
Yeah. I have thought of a topic as well. So okay.
Do you want to reveal it or just wait for everyone to see?
It's going to be Viking related. Let me put it that way.
I'm already intrigued.
Yeah, we're already interested in history. Especially, I think we're interested in history when the accepted normal perception is wrong. And people think it's not just about the horns. Everybody knows that Viking helmets didn't have horns. That's just the thing. There's a lot of other things that people get wrong about the Vikings. And I think I will talk about that. If they will have me.
Regardless of whether you will be accepted, I would really love to get a preview of that, preferably before the 7th of June, when I'm flying to Iceland with a tour.
We'll see what we can do. Okay.
At least you can share sources with me.
Yeah. But QED isn't the only game in town. We are getting closer, very much closer to European Skeptics Congress in Lyon in France. And it starts on the 31st of May, and it's over 3 days, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so it ends on the 2nd of June. You will not, unfortunately, be there. I will be there, and it will be a great time, too. And if you are quick, after you hear this episode, you can still get the early bird prize. It's either if you book before or until... It says on the website, 15th of May, you'll get a rebate. And please remember, if you are part of any organization, skeptical organization, that is, you indicate that and on the text line, and you will get a further rebate as well. So,
does it only apply to member organizations of EXO?
No, no. Any skeptical organization is eligible for the rebate.
Amazing. Okay, great. Yeah, great. I'm really sad that I won't be able to make it.
We will miss you.
Yeah, it was a really hard decision, but I had to shuffle a couple of things around.
Well, you're traveling quite a lot already, and, so.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. All those things to look forward to over this year. I think we have an episode as well to look forward to. So we have content and we'd like to share it with you, dear listener. So as usual, we start with Trish, also known as This Week in Skeptical History. And this is a topic that we have covered a couple of times already in at least some aspects of it on this show, and that is smallpox. So, first of all, smallpox is a disease that is potentially lethal. It was caused by variola virus, two strains of which have at least been identified. One of them is called variola minor and the other one variola major. The former had a mortality rate of approximately 1%, whereas the other one had a mortality rate of close to 30%, which is very, very high for a disease. And it's not only that, it's a terrible disease. It comes with lots of scars towards the end because blisters are appearing on your skin along with a rash and everything. So it's very inconvenient, even if it's not lethal, even if it doesn't kill you, it will mark you forever, for all your life.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah. And it was probably a virus that originated in India or Egypt, according to the World Health Organization. And one of the good things about this is that towards the end of the 18th century, a very easy and good way to fight and actually avoid becoming ill with the disease has been found. And that was by Edward Jenner, who in 1796 administered the first, as we call it, vaccination now. And that vaccination was, well, a little bit of liquid from a blister from a cow's skin that went down with the disease that we call cowpox. Well, with the maids and all that, I'm not going to go into that story, how he came up with the idea of inoculation. But it turned out that people who got in contact with the liquid from those blisters could develop an immunity against smallpox, which was not the cow's disease, but the human disease. And they are very closely related, these viruses. So this is the reason why being immune to one could result in a cross immunity against the other one. We talked about this on episode 274, actually. And in episode 200, we talked about something else that happened in the commission of scientists who were working with the eradication project of smallpox. Because towards the 1960s, the WHO started coming up with this idea of getting rid of this terrible disease once and for all. A massive worldwide inoculation project was on the way, and it was so successful that in 1979, December the 9th, it was announced by this professional body that it has been achieved. So there has not been a single wild case of the disease for years. And as a result of that, and this is the day that we are celebrating this week, at the 8th of May, 1980, the World Health Organization announced endorsing this previous statement that smallpox had been eradicated. That means that we are not to fear this disease anymore because it is completely gone. By completely gone, I'm not saying telling the truth, because there are unknown amounts of the virus stored in research facilities in some countries. But that is mainly for research purposes. So hopefully we don't see a resurgence of this as a result of, I don't know, releasing some of that virus out into the wild. Because for a long while, a couple of years after that, actually, vaccinations against smallpox stopped because the virus was not there to be infected
with. Yeah, it wasn't necessary anymore.
It wasn't necessary anymore. But that was such a success story. And I'm not saying that some adverse reactions had not been registered over this campaign of vaccination on a massive scale. So there have been some, but overall, when we are talking about the adverse side effects of vaccinations and not just talking about vaccine reactions, which are completely different things, the researchers assessed the rates of these, and it looks like one or two people out of a million got so seriously ill that they died. So one or two out of a million. Compare it with a 1% or a 30% death rate after getting ill with the disease. It's a huge difference.
Yeah.
So yes, it's a risk-benefit analysis that you have to make, and it worked. It worked perfectly because the world is now rid of that freaking virus,
yeah,
at least out in the wild.
Yeah, and 40 years later now, nobody has to even risk getting vaccinated because you don't even have to do that anymore. So from now on,
exactly,
it's free sailing, if you will. So everything is fine. Which I would like to say, I want to look into, let's not go into it now, but one time or another, we should talk about Edward Jenner. But of course, I've heard that some of the stories,
yes,
about the milkmaids are not exactly what we have been told. They have been exaggerated, but never mind. It doesn't matter. Somehow he did draw the conclusion that he could use this cowpox to inoculate people against,
exactly,
smallpox. And he wasn't even the first one to do that, I think, but let's not speculate. But
yeah, there are rumors and stories about even happening.
Yeah, yeah, but in modern medicine, that was the start of the whole concept of vaccination.
Yes,
and
exactly,
all modern vaccination goes back to this idea that was at least popularized by Edward Jenner. And it's,
and the name vaccination comes from that fact,
oh, yeah,
as,
yeah,
well, because it comes from the word vacca, which means cow.
Yeah.
So right. It actually has that stronger,
yes,
connection.
So the next time you get a vaccination, so you say, I would like to have my cowination, please.
Cowination.
So that's what it means.
If you use the Hungarian word, it would be tehenation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah. Tehenatio.
I'll go with cowination.
Cowination. All right. And there are plans to do that with some other diseases as well. So
you mean eradicate them?
For eradication.
Yeah.
Yes. So eradication plans are on the way for polio, which is a terrible disease as well. And even though we are routinely vaccinated against it in the developed world, in large chunks of the world, people don't have that opportunity. They don't have it. So the WHO is working hard to make it available to everyone, to make some kind of vaccination, because there are certain inoculation methods, and polio is very varied in that regard. But yeah, so it is underway. However, that is one of those that seem to be coming back in certain countries. And as a result of either people not having access to the vaccines or outright anti-vaccination sentiment, which is something that we shouldn't have. All right, so on the 8th of May 1918, the WHO General Assembly announces the eradication of smallpox, which makes it official. This was a very important milestone.
Yes.
And it unfortunately has a skeptical angle because of the anti-vaccination movement that is ongoing even today. All right, so we should probably move on to the news, because we have a couple.
Right, yes, we do. And I'm going to talk about air travel and in relation to the climate crisis.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, you're the biggest villain here when it comes to climate change.
Indeed. Yes. I have a massive ecological footprint.
Yes, you do. Because air travel is one of the big culprits when it comes to emissions of greenhouse gases. This is why already over 30 years ago, back in 1992, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change Treaty was signed and agreed on. And there were provisions in there for countries to report their emissions from aviation. This was done to serve as a baseline and to be able to measure how to reduce these emissions. But there were and there are some problems with this reporting. First of all, it is self-reported, which may be inaccurate, and it's also slow. You rely on all countries to send in their reports. But even worse, many countries don't have to report at all. It was just voluntary. Exceptions were made, most notably for China and India, but lots of other countries as well. So we don't know the full picture. We'll have to guess. But now, a Norwegian team of researchers have developed a big data model, quote unquote. It's called AV Team. And they've done this to fill in the gaps here. Do you remember big data, Andras? There was a lot of talk about big data. About 12 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe. Everybody talks about AI, but it sort of started with big data. It's probably quite different, but anyway. Big data was, and probably in some circles still is, a buzzword in computing. Wikipedia defines it as, quote, data sets that are too large or complex to be dealt with by traditional data processing application software, end quote. So I don't know. I'm not a computer scientist. I don't know what it really means. But using this big data model that they have developed, the researchers are now calculating a more accurate estimate of aviation CO2 emissions, and they are doing it more or less in real time by tracking all the air traffic that's out there. And this is public data. You can follow when planes are leaving and arriving all the time. But of course, the result of this tracking is bad news from this. The results are discouraging, I would say. The researchers conclude that the yearly emissions are about 911 million tons compared to the 604 million tons that were reported according to the treaty. So it's 50% more than we knew. I guess people understood that it would be more, but now we know how much more it is. If you count per capita, the US is still in the lead, followed by Australia, which is not so surprising. Big countries, geographically, high standard of living, so a lot of people can fly a lot, especially domestic travel. Surprisingly, Norway is on third place. And at first they thought, well, okay, Norway is a very long and narrow country, so you have to fly a lot. But actually, most of the domestic flights are between the country's major cities, which are Oslo, Trondheim, Stavanger, Bergen, and Tromsø. And they are not so far from each other, except for Tromsø, which is at the far north, but Norwegians.
So people have a tendency to fly over distances?
Yeah, which is...
In the country where electromobility is a leading thing, so like they are leading the world in electromobility, and yet people are flying like crazy. Oh my god!
Yeah, but like we say, it's always more complicated than you think. And I can speculate. And this is not in the report. This is just Pontus speculating. So take it for what it is. But maybe it's hard to have really good straight roads in Norway because they have all these fjords and a lot of mountains and stuff. So maybe it's very much quicker to fly and it becomes very convenient. Anyway, they're not doing as well as they should, and they should be ashamed of themselves. if we have any Norwegian people listening.
Shame on you, Norway.
Shame on you, I'm sorry. But anyway, that was the news item anyway. We now know more about air travel and how much it contributes to climate change and climate crisis. And it, even if it's bad news, it's always better to know exactly how bad it is. That makes it easier to do something about it.
And with big data, I always try to wrap my head around the idea of big data by thinking of continual measurements of things. Like, imagine if you take a temperature measurement on a daily basis, or if you take a temperature measurement every second or every 10 seconds, it's a massive difference in the amount of data that you'll gather.
Yeah.
But you will get a clearer picture of what's going on.
Yeah.
If you have continual measurements. And that's what we have, basically. Like, it's data as well when you see the analyses of, I don't know, meteorological stations, but also like digital cameras, like CCTV systems and all that. They are now being analyzed by algorithms, and those are working with shitload of data as well.
Yeah. So, but I guess that's where AI comes in now, because there's too many data points for a human person to find the patterns, and AI can be used to find patterns in there that we didn't know was there.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, it is. All right, let me continue. I have made a bit of a boo-boo because we heard about the Hungarian Flat Earth Award 2 weeks ago, I believe that was. But somehow I never did report on the Swedish equivalent. That was happened already in January, and somehow I talked about it a lot, but not on this show. So it sort of slipped between, I don't know. But I take the opportunity now, because the annual meeting, as I mentioned in at the top of the show, the annual meeting of the Swedish Skeptics are on this coming weekend. It's on Saturday. So if you listen to this and you are very quick, maybe you can make it, because this show comes out on Friday. But it's high time anyway for me to tell who won these awards, because there's more than one. First, we have the Good Award, the Enlightener of the Year Award, for someone who's done something very good. It could be an organization or a person or a couple of people who have promoted science or critical thinking. And this year's, or rather, I should say last year's, because this was 2023, the winner was a Swedish Instagram account called Kvinnokliniken, and I don't expect you to even really register that, if you, unless you're Swedish.
It has something to do with clinic?
Yes, it has something to do with clinic. It translates to women's clinic. So that's usually what you call it, that department of the hospital. But this is the name of an Instagram account. And these guys who are doing this are doing a great job in countering a lot of the myths and pseudoscience when it comes to women's health issues. You know, mumbo jumbo about wild births and quote unquote natural contraception methods, or nonsense about menopause. Endometriosis is very popular to talk about, but also it's a difficult disease and you shouldn't spread misinformation about it. And these guys are doing a great job in countering all of that. There's a lot of new ageism out there, appeal to nature. And in certain cases, very, very harmful or dangerous, really. But the controversial thing with this winner is that the creators behind the Instagram account wish to be anonymous. So they have been anonymous all the time. And that raises the question, can we award someone when we don't really know who they are and what their true credentials are? So that's something we had to discuss quite a lot. But after a bit of a detective work, we managed to leave word with them that we were interested to reach them so they could come back and sort of sort all of that out. They are still anonymous, but now a few in the Swedish board, Swedish Skeptics, they know now who they are, and they do have very good credentials, but we will still have to keep it under wraps. Very cool, and congratulations to them.
Let me just add that if everything that they say checks out, the credentials might not be that important when they are doing science communication. Obviously, it gives them a bit more credibility. That's obvious. But from a skeptical point of view, it's probably much more important that what they say makes sense and checks out and it's scientifically correct.
You're quite right. But we were still a little bit nervous, because even if everything they've said so far seemed to be on the level, we don't want to give this title to someone that if the risk is that they'll go on and maybe say something stupid in the future. Yeah. So we wanted to double check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a sensible thing to do. Yeah.
I have to be careful. Anyway, there is another prize as well, the bad prize, the one that I usually want to translate as the Confounder of the Year award, even if Confounder is not found in an English dictionary, but I think it sounds good. So,
how does it sound in Swedish?
Förvillare.
Förvillare. I cannot
remember
that. For year after year, you mentioned this and I cannot remember it.
I wouldn't expect you to. It doesn't have a straight translation in any dictionary. Okay. You have to explain what it means. But confounder, I think, conveys the meaning. Somebody who confounds the public. Anyway, this year, or 2023 year's award, was split between two companies. They are called Swedish Paleo and the Paleo Institute. And they're actually called that in English, even though they are Swedish companies. Both of them are promoting and selling the idea of so-called paleo diet. You can hear that from the name. And the notion is that humans should eat as we did back in the quote-unquote Stone Age. So... first of all, people back in the day, they ate whatever they could. Whatever they could get their hands on that looked like food, you ate, because you didn't have the luxury to be choosy. If you happened to live near the sea or a lake, you ate a lot of seafood and fish. While if you lived in a forest, then maybe you were foraging or hunting. So there's never been a specific consistent paleo diet, because people have been living all over the place. Second of all, these companies make a lot of pseudoscientific health claims, promising or alluding to that their products can cure everything from inflammatory diseases, autoimmune conditions, and even cancer. They can't say that straight out legally, but if you read their website, you very easily come away with that impression. Mm-hmm. And they talk a lot about the AIP diet, which they call, which means autoimmune protocol diet, which has very little basis in science. It's just a buzzword that they have thought up. And we wanted to make the public aware that this is a lot of nonsense. And we got quite a lot of pushback. People came back and said, this is just natural. Why could that? This cannot be wrong. If you read the detailed motivation to why they got this award, you can see why natural, for one thing, is not a guarantee that it's right. But these health claims are just made up. They don't have any basis for what they're claiming. And anyway, so that was the awards that the Swedish Skeptic handed out for 2023. And there will be someone there at the annual meeting on Saturday to receive the award for the Enlightener of the Year, even though they want to be anonymous. We will see how we will handle that, but...
That event is not open for the press?
it's not... No, it's open for members of the Swedish Skeptics. They have said they are willing to having their picture taken if they can sort of make sure that you can't recognize them. We will solve it somehow. It'll be interesting.
Okay. Well, being recognized is one thing that is part of your credibility. If you're a researcher, you'll probably not be recognized by face, but by name and your credentials. So a lot of people are working hard to get enough publications against their names so that they can move forward and move up the ladder, so to speak. Well, we know, we have heard of something that is called a paper mill, which is not the old-fashioned way of producing paper. It's a new kind of way of producing scientific papers without actually conducting any kind of research, making up shit as you go along, and basically working with completely made-up data sets. You know, the things that Andrew Wakefield did with his paper in The Lancet in 1998... So yes, these are cold paper mills that are pouring out a shitload of papers, of scientific papers that look scientific, but don't have the actual content. So they don't have the actual work behind it. And sometimes when publishers realize that some of the papers published on their pages have been done in that fashion, they have a tendency to first flag those papers with a concern that something is fishy. And when it turns out that something is really going on that should not be, then they retract the papers. Now, apparently, this is what happened to the Scottish Medical Journal, that retracted 13 articles from back in 2022 because some newly submitted articles were a little bit suspicious. They started investigating them, and it turned out that some of the authors, so they were similar, they were the same, and they were coming from the same institutions and all that. And it turned out that they could gather up 13 actual papers that had to be retracted because of misconduct that they could find as a result of the investigations. We are talking about whether authors were the actual contributors to the papers and whether there is a proper research process. Some of these papers, which is a little bit surprising to me, seem to have been meta-analyses. So not original research papers, but meta-analyses. I really don't know how you can publish a meta-analysis without doing the work of researching all the original papers that have been published. But that is something that is unbelievably important for the integrity of scientific research. Without that, without weeding all those out, without finding the bad ones, the bad pieces of research and the bad papers that do not add to the overall scientific knowledge of humanity, but derail it by looking like actual research and not being one. Imagine how the network of science works. People citing other people's papers all the time. So that can reach so far, even if they don't have the proper research behind them. So it's good on the Scottish Medical Journal, which is a publication of Sage, which is one of the largest publishers out there. It's an American company, but the Scottish Medical Journal has contributed to the betterment of science with this the step. Interestingly, though, that was all done in one go. So it's like a blanket statement that they made that this was going on. And for a while, though, there was an administrative error made in this. Now it's fixed. But at the beginning, when you clicked on those links leading to the articles, they didn't say they were retracted. But yeah, so it was a little bit misleading, but now it's fixed. Yeah. When you think of the millions of papers published and how much of it could be done in this fashion, it's mind-blowing, and it's a real crack in the system of science, and we have to be very careful not to allow that to happen very often.
Yeah. Well, that's why it's so important that we have things like the Retraction Watch organization that monitors this and highlights and look out for these things. Another person who's done that a lot is Elizabeth Bick. And I have a short update about her and also about somebody who we are not such a big fan of, namely Didier Raoul. So let's start with Didier Raoul. We have talked about him many times on this show. He's a very questionable French researcher who has promoted hydroxychloroquine against COVID-19, for one thing. He's also been accused of falsifying his research results and of unethical research. Some say that he actually did experiments on human subjects without asking permission. So,
or using the ethical approval of the ethical community of one research up to the other one.
Yes.
So, he just recycled ethical approvals, apparently.
Yes. Yeah.
Fun guy.
Yeah. Another thing that he is that he's very litigious. So, known for suing his critics. And this is exactly what he did to Elizabeth Bick, who has made a name for herself for checking and scrutinizing published research papers. She has found a number of problems in Raoul's studies and falsified data and duplication of images and things like that. And when she pointed this out, Raoul sued her for harassment and even blackmail. He said what she did was blackmail. And the only thing she had done was to point to some research paper saying, hey, there are problems with this. This cannot be right. Now, the good news is that a French court of appeals have now rejected the appeals of Raoul. So the case is now fully closed and Raoul lost. And that decision came already 26th of March, but Elizabeth Big posted this result on X last week, which is where I saw it. So big congratulations to Elizabeth Big, whom we interviewed on episode 308.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so we did that. That's a little over 2 years ago she was on the show and told all about her quest to find these errors and problems with published data, or published studies, I should say.
It's unbelievably important what she does. Mm. And she doesn't only try to expose fraudulent activities, but she sometimes just notices things that might have slipped the editor's eyes or checks. It's about making sure that the quality of science is there. Sometimes it's small errors, sometimes it's absolute fraudulent activities like copying photos and
that's apparently very common. You copy photos and then they flip it around right to left or upside down to make people not notice that it's the same, but
zoom in or something like that.
Apparently, yes, you just cut out a part of the thing. But that is apparently one of Elizabeth Big's skills, is that she is very good with recognizing pictures and seeing, I've seen this picture before. This doesn't belong here. And she told us about that in the interview.
Yeah. So I do recommend everyone to get a listen of that interview, even if you have already, because it's we can learn a lot listening to her. Yeah. All right. So, let's do science right. And the other thing should be that policies are based on science. So if policies are not done right, they can get really wrong. So I'm eager to find out who's been really wrong lately, Pontus.
Well, as it is often the case when I'm at it, today is about religion rather than science, and religion in education, to be specific. It's actually two different stories that I want to highlight today, both coming from the UK. The first one comes from England, where the government now decided that faith schools no longer have to offer half of their places in the schools to children who do not belong to their religion. Now, I'm definitely against religion taking any kind of place in public or basic education, except if you go through it historically or from a philosophical point of view. But now faith schools in England, we no longer have to offer these 50% of their places to others. And that means that there's an even bigger risk of discrimination because you're isolating children of a certain background. And you're letting them be exposed only to your special religion. Moreover, it increases the chance or the risk of inappropriate preaching and indoctrination in these schools, because who is going to complain to the authorities if all the parents belong to the same religion?
Yeah.
You're a fundamental Christian or whatever, Muslim, whatever, and you put your child into this particular school and they are doing unlawful preaching at that school, but you're fine with it, so nobody's going to complain. So that's not good.
Actually, there are not many things that I agree on with Richard Dawkins when it comes to religion, especially not his approach to how to go on about it. But one thing that I remember hearing from him for the first time was that there is no such thing as a Catholic child or a Muslim child. There is a child.
Yes.
And there is indoctrination, and you end up with a Catholic adult or a Muslim adult. So it's that simple.
Yeah. So we can never avoid that. And I'm not even sure that we would try to do that. But we can't avoid that happening at the home, right? But education.
Institutionally, that's different.
That should be neutral. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So I mentioned there were two cases. The other case come from Northern Ireland. So that's also the UK. And it is about a recent Court of Appeal ruling that decided to keep allowing that Christian core syllabus of religious education will still be allowed. Well, the court argues that it's not really okay to have preaching in schools, but since the parents still have the right to have their child excused fully or partly from attending these religious parts or the collective worship, whatever it is, they will not do anything about it. So you cannot do it, but since the parents can say, my child is not supposed to be part of this class. But that means you can be excused from religious indoctrinations, but then as a child, you get singled out and you risk being alienated from your classmates. You feel that you're excluded and you don't want to be excluded and you want to go there anyway. And that way, the back door is open for religious indoctrination in schools. And it shouldn't be there. As we mentioned, it's not the place for such things. So, two different clear cases of what I would characterize as educational malpractice in the UK, both in England and Northern Ireland. The UK gets this week's prize for being really wrong.
Well deserved, just like always. But that basically brings us to the end of today's episode. And I think we managed to find a quote to finish on that is quite fitting to what has been said. And that quote is for Sir William Drummond of Logiamont, or please, I'm begging our Scottish listeners to send us a recording of the proper pronunciation of his name. I couldn't find it anywhere. Anyhow, he was a Scottish diplomat and a member of parliament and a poet and a philosopher and all that. And what he said was, "He who will not reason is a bigot. He who cannot is a fool. And he who dares not is a slave."
Ooh. Harsh words. Harsh words.
Yeah, they are.
I get the sentiment, and I think he was talking about his peers, people who are of some sort of privilege. Because if you really are a slave, then I wouldn't fault you for not daring to speak up.
Yeah,
that we just have to point that out. But if you are,
yeah, but you also have to point out that and I wouldn't be as harsh as to saying that someone who cannot reason is a fool, not necessarily. So
okay,
it's just it's probably just a person who's not skillful enough in reasoning, which is something that can be learned to us at least to some extent. However, refusing to reason or listen to reason is really something that leads to bigotry. And the other thing is, I think about the slave part, if you're willing to shut up because you're afraid, so by choice, you're making that decision not to say something. And I know that a lot of people are in a position that it's financially, existentially better for them not to do that.
Yeah.
But it basically what leads to people's opinions being oppressed.
Yeah. And I was maybe a little bit too harsh there, because it's about reasoning. And you can reason within yourself. Maybe I was talking more about speaking up. And you can't always speak up. But what you can do is to try to figure it out for yourself. And then, depending on your situation, maybe you can do something about it.
Yeah. Anyhow.
Yeah.
That is really the last moment of our show, or the last thing that we wanted to share with our listeners. So, Pontus, I'd like to thank you for this week.
Thanks a lot.
And many thanks to our listeners as well for tuning in. Please keep doing so. And please don't forget to leave us reviews, positive ones preferably, or a couple of stars. And 5-star reviews are our favorites. So
please do that.
Please do that on any of the listening platforms that you might be using. But until next week, goodbye.
Hej då.
Nisla.
Tschüss. We'll be right back.
This has been your ESP Experience. The show is produced and recorded by the ESP.eu. Join us again next time, but until then, please send your feedback, comments, or death threats to info@theesp.eu. We would also love to hear your ideas and suggestions regarding future episodes, as well as news from your country of residence that might interest others across the continent. If you have a local event or organization to promote, please don't hesitate to let us know, as we are more than happy to help. All music in the program was written and performed by Keisha J. Gray and George Schwab and is used with their permission. Please check out our webpage at www.theesp.eu, follow us on Twitter at @espodcast_eu, and like us on Facebook.
I don't know how you can believe.
I'll be at QED 2014.
No.
Which is happening.
No, not 2014.
Fuck, I did it again. Okay.
But there was, and is, some... There were and there are. Jesus. Thank you very much to our listeners as well. Please keep doing so. I think you skipped...
The tuning in. Okay, I can
say it again, just in case.
yeah.
Okay. And I can cut it back in if I'm
okay,
right.
Okay. Yeah.